Just keep your eyes closed. She only takes sacrifices. We can't look directly at her. Heather? Is that really you?
Who are you talking to?
Everyone, and welcome to episode number 3 of the Pretty Much Geek Podcast's Halloween Horror Month 2018. I'm your host, Marcel Delgado, here with Alonzo Castillo.
Hey, everybody.
Today we're talking about Blair Witch, or The Blair Witch, not The Blair Witch Project, not Blair Witch 2, Book of Shadows, a 2016 version that was essentially the studio's way of saying, forget that sequel that didn't come out a while ago, and let's remember just the one that has all the hype and the nostalgia from your memories, and just come and watch it and check it out, because this is gonna essentially be a new generation of it. Found footage genre for me specifically, it's a guilty pleasure and just a pleasure in general for me. I love found footage because it does something that I feel not a lot of other film genres can do, in that because it's such a new genre and it's almost unconventional, I feel it's hard to judge it on just the basic film standards because you're dealing with almost a new genre.
What it also does so good is, like, you see a character develop on screen, you try to, like, put yourself in their shoes, and with found footage movies, you know, you're kind of forced to put yourself in their shoes, like, you know, like, it's one of those things where no matter if you look or if you even look away, sort of, you're still in the shoes of that person as they go through these trials continuously in these horror movies.
It's always the point of having it in POV. It's like you are on the journey. It makes for better immersion. However, because of that, there also you can see a lot of the slip ups, and you can also see when it's just, because I was saying you can't really judge it on its own on basic film merits, doesn't mean that it can't be still. Recently, I think I watched it was Taking of Deborah Logan. That was one of the movies that was going to be it was up on the votes to possibly go. And I heard a lot about that movie, and I wanted to see what it was. And I remember before I watched this, I'm like, okay, well, let's kind of dip our feet back into the found footage pool again, because it's just been a while. And I feel when it's done correctly, it can just make you just disbelieve the fact that this is a film and this was shot, and you can, for just that few moments, you just want to believe that this may not have happened, or there's some creepy stuff to this. Actually, I remember the Paranormal Activity movies when we were in high school. That wasn't the first found footage phenomenon, as we'll get to later on the second part of the podcast, but
it was like our generation's, like, Blair Witch, where it just took everything by storm and reinvent and revitalize the genre again, like Blair Witch did. Where it's really crazy how it seems like, maybe, I don't know, maybe that's just kind of how it's going to be like in the future, where just like every couple of years there's just a new found footage movie that drops, and it's going to just captivate everybody, you know, because quarantine did that a little bit, right?
It did it to a degree. There's been a couple of ones that were like, Cloverfield was one of the ones that comes to mind, and the original Blair Witch Project. But, and I remember the thing about this one is I didn't watch it because, as we were talking about Paranormal Activity, at a certain point the genre became ridiculously oversaturated. Yeah. It became overdone because of Paranormal Activity. It got so popular and overbloated that everyone was coming out with one here and there. VHS, VHS 2, Adam Wingard, the director of this movie, directed those two. I didn't watch those two, but I remember we started seeing just ones coming from left and right, here and there. Netflix coming out with some, Hulu's coming out with some. That much oversaturation, it's harder, and all of the flaws within the genre become more apparent, and it becomes a lot. You scrutinize the films more.
Yeah,
and it's kind of hard to just choose which ones are good and which ones are bad. They kind of all just mesh into this blob.
Yeah,
and I thought that this is what this one was going to be. I didn't watch it. I didn't hear anything about it as well from anyone that I knew that was watching, and my friends watched it. I think you might have watched it, but you never talked about it.
Yeah, no, because it was one of those movies where you know this. I tend to go to every movie regardless of if everybody tells me to stay away. But with Blair Witch, you know, I've always been a fan of what the original did for just as a whole. And when I heard the new one was coming out, I was like, I want to check it out. Like, I want to see what it can do. And personally, for me, it's probably, other than, like, I would say Cloverfield, if it's just straight up horror, it's probably my favorite, like, POV, like, found footage horror movie, which is probably the new Blair Witch, this one. That this is probably, honestly, my favorite one that I've seen out of all the other ones. Because I feel like this one, for me personally, they do a lot of things I really enjoy. You know, like, they just, a lot of the things they do in the film I really enjoy. Like, you know, going, like, just through the story, and we've both seen this, or we both know about this, is, like, I like how they really justify all the camera work in this Blair Witch, where everyone's wearing earpiece cameras, and there's a, you know, a director within the movie also filming a documentary, and, like, so I like that a lot of the camera work makes sense for why we're in that POV point of view. And then on top of that, also the fact that because they don't, you know, like, I always think about it, I'm like, why are they, you know, leading with a camera? You know, like, right. there's a dragon down
the hall.
It's
almost like this thing where it's like, oh my God, look at this thing. It's coming to attack this demonic monster. But I make sure I got to get this shot and make sure it looks perfectly in line so that the audience can see it. And it's just like, that's just not believable. Because you're saying, like, they have these POV earpiece lenses that they got on them. You can go find these at, like, Best Buy or various other, like, places where you can go find equipment like that. But there's a sense of practicality. There's a sense of everything that we're doing here. To a degree, it's, you know, liberties being taken and whatnot. And it's still a production, so that they're, like, just trying their best to make sure that you stay ingrained in that. And that's something that I saw from, like, the director, Adam Wingard.
Yeah.
And he's coming, up and coming. He's going to be doing Kong vs. Godzilla, which I was surprised when I was looking up his IMDb, like, filmography, and seeing that he's done. And he did Your Next, which you've seen.
Yeah, I have seen. You've seen Your Next. That one, I mean, it's interesting because I feel like just kind of like learning a little bit more about Your Next, and it just seems like out of all the movies he's kind of done, this Blair Witch was probably the one that he had the most control over, which I think, in my opinion, is also his best movie that he's made so far. Your Next was entertaining, but the scare was also there. It was one of those where it was kind of more of, like,
a lot of those usual slasher
horror
tropes.
Like, you know, just a very horror movie. Don't get me wrong, it did a couple things that I enjoyed because it was very graphic and very sudden. Like, some of the deaths were just very, like, oh man, where'd that come from? And, you know, and it didn't always 100% rely on jump scares, which I could tell he's trying to kind of switch it up to how he does those things. He does trope, of course, because everybody has to, but you can just tell that there's a lot more heart into his filmmaking. You know, there's a lot more care into his filmmaking, and you see it. So that's what I really appreciated for him. Like, especially, like I said, with this Blair Witch. Like,
because this movie's been in development hell. It was in development hell from 2009 up until 2016 when it came out. It was originally going to be called The Woods, and it was essentially just shelved for a while. And then it just came out. It's like, oh no, this is Blair Witch. We're just doing it.
Well, I'm glad they came out with it because I honestly really enjoyed this one. I mean, I showed, you know, we watched it together, but I was really interested to see what you were going to say after we actually watched it, because I know you're not you weren't the hugest fan of found footage, but I felt like you were really going to enjoy a lot of
it. I wasn't the hugest fan of found footage. I do love found footage. It's just the ones that I went back in recently to, like, cleanse my, it wasn't a good palate cleanser what I watched recently.
Yeah, okay.
The ones that I saw weren't the best examples to go off of, so it kind of just irked me a little bit.
Yeah, I love that bad taste.
A little bad taste in my mouth, but more so in the, as far as the story goes, it just, the premise of this one is, a lot of it just falls in line with how it should normally, if you're going to follow up with a sequel to this, make sure it makes sense. Make sure that there's a reason why we're here, we're telling the story, and this being that Heather, the original character from the first movie, had a sibling. And he's grown up now, and he's missed his sister, and he's wanting to find out what happened to her in the woods. Years have passed now. The Blair Witch Project's been a thing. And I like the way they treat it. It's like almost like it's as viral as it became in our world, it was treated and it was released as a full film in the stories world.
Yeah.
And it's become a phenomenon. And one day, these videos get uploaded online on YouTube, found near in the Black Hills forests that were near the house that was later Heather was last found. Him and several of his friends who are in college head up over to Burkittsville, and they go and decide to go and find Heather. And in that itself, I like the fact that it's like I don't want to stretch too much to say that there's heart, but it's like at least there's a semblance of like we're doing this for a reason. He's here to find his sister. Does that work as far as like a motivating reason to have this character keep going and doing all these things? not all the time for me at some cases, because to me it's like when you're going to be going into these woods and as things keep ratcheting up in the story and so that it becomes a little harder to believe. But overall, it's sort of the premise that we're just backing off the story from. I think it makes a lot of sense, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, you know, obviously that was one thing I kind of had to think about myself too. As I was like, well, you know, his having hope for his sister still being alive, is that enough to drive a character to, you know, continue and progress and do all these things? And I think more than that, and it's funny, kind of funny how they mentioned at the beginning of the movie that they feel that Lisa, the director, she's kind of almost like, they're afraid that she's almost taking advantage of James for his situation, for the connection to Heather. I think that actually plays really well, because it's almost like everybody kind of has almost their own individual stakes. You know, she has an, I would say, admiration for the Blair Witch, just like I think everybody in this universe does, period. You know, Peter has his own, he was a kid that grew up in Burkittsville when the original searches happened for Heather. So he knows, like, he's connected to this town in a way. And then with Lane and Talia, like, they're all kind of just also big fans of the Blair Witch. I think the only person that was, I guess you would say, out of the water, like a fish out of the water, would be Peter's girlfriend.
Ashley.
Yeah. And she, you know, like, obviously, like, she's just kind of like the romantic partner and stuff.
I think, have those characters out of the side that were just like, it's like a slasher. They're just going to be a kill off screen or something. Or, like, we see later on the movie, just very, just does a lot of body, little semblance of body horror, but enough to where I just don't, it makes me uncomfortable. But, no, yeah, like, there's a reason for every person to be here. And as we keep going on throughout the movie, you feel bad for these characters. And, there's a semblance of when they go to Burkittsville and when they meet Talia and they meet Lane. Off the bat, I don't really trust these guys. They have a weird, like, vibe off of them. And then you see, when they walk inside, you see the Confederate flag or something. And it's just, it's a lot of, like, they're just doing little, like a visual cues of, like, you don't trust these guys. These guys are kind of off. They live out in the woods, near the woods, and they're very, almost glorifying and just idolizing this,
the Blair Witch,
therefore, because they live in this area. And it's almost like, what's going on here? We're just trusting these people that we met off the internet.
Yeah,
and as you and me have known, people meeting people off the internet, that doesn't exactly you don't always meet the most normal people out there on the internet. But when they hit into the actual Black Hills woods, they leave hope behind. And there's a semblance as more and more they keep walking into the woods and further getting into it, everything's nice and cheerful, and they're going to go off and just have this little adventure. And we have our drone, we have GPS, we have technology, it's 2016. And just as it keeps moving on along and things start happening here, and there are little things, Ashley gets her foot messed up, it starts hurting, or something weird happens. They hear a bang at night when they're sleeping, and they can't find Lane, and just little things here and there. It's just like, no, we shouldn't have come here. And you can't help but feel bad for them.
Yeah, and a big part too, like, you know, like you were saying, like, you know, she gets her foot hurt, they hear, like, bumps in the night, and then they wake up, and it's the big, like, reveal where all the symbols of
all the Blair
Witch, all the stick figures of the Blair Witch, they're all around them. And then that's kind of when they're, like, all freaked out, and they're like, yo, we gotta get out of here, fuck this. Like,
yeah.
They get out of there, and then that's when they realize the truth, that Lane and Talia were just these, you know, these scumbags, kind of, like, that tricked them. And
which I never even first been in. When I saw that, I'm like, okay, it's kind of like something that I expect, and I thought that was a little bit of, like, a little cheap bit in the writing. But the way they play off of that,
oh yeah, afterwards,
I like it, because, like, it's almost like, no, yeah, we're just doing this for the sake of just the lore of it all, and we're adding to it, but yeah. we're pawns in this game as well.
Yeah, and so once that kind of, like, I would say, like, little falling out happens between the group, and, you know, and they all kind of, like, end up going back to the camp, or not all of them, but, you know, our main four go back to the camp, and Lane and Talia, they go off on their own because they have to make their way back. I love that. At this point, they almost kind of have this feeling of, like, even though they had been walking for hours, they're like, you know what? Well, it's obviously not haunted anymore. Like, it was just these, like, crazy people that live in this town, like, fucking with us. Like, we're just going to go home. We're going to go back to the camp, sleep overnight, and then just after that, like, find our way home. And that night, everything just gone.
I know. There's a certain point in the movie where just shit hits the fan. The beginning, the first 30 to 40 minutes of this movie is somewhat of a slow burn. I mean, you're going to have that generally in every found footage movie because it's like you're just trying to, they're trying to mirror day-to-day life and just like, you know, like, okay, we're doing this. But like you're saying, once that morning hits, not morning, it's night still. And that's one thing that they do is they play with time a lot. And my thing is this, whenever you fuck with time and you add that as a factor into it, that's terrifying. Because there is, at that point, whoever is behind the scenes as paranormal beings that are at play, you are the ultimate victim. You have no control of it.
Absolutely no. Like that's my favorite thing when they sleep and then they wake up and then it's like, oh, it's like 7:10, whatever time it is.
I set my alarm for 7:10, but it says that it's at a certain time.
And it's still pitch black outside. And then they continue to go out with all these things that start happening and it's still dark out. Like it's night, no matter what you could do at that point. And I'm not afraid of the dark, but I'm afraid of the sun not showing up tomorrow. Like
it's a natural thing to be terrifying because reality is warped at this point. And I like the idea that the Black Hills is this nexus of time or just this little area that the witch can just manipulate.
Oh yeah.
And it's like, oh no, everything that, you know, all bits of reality at this point in this section right here, this is my town. Yeah. You're in my area. This is my zone. I own this bitch. As we keep going on and moving through like all that, what she can do, this character's insanely scary.
What she does to all the characters, I mean, their deaths are honestly some of my favorite, like in any horror movie, because they're, in my opinion, they're so memorable. One of them is very specific to the
Talia's.
Yeah,
oh Talia's death is very big because we're dealing with the time. The two characters, Talia and Lane, they get, once they're found out that they were just messing, they're not messing with them, but they're trying to just honor the Blair Witch. Once they're found out, they separate themselves from the our main four, separate themselves from them, and they tell them, no, you guys got to go find out on your own, and they are lost too. And they're just wandering around, and when they find them again, their hair's all matted, they're dirty, they look like they've been walking, and it's just the way, and it just goes into the acting as well, too, because I felt that the acting, there was a couple moments, a couple here and there where there's a little bit of overacting, but for the most part, especially at the end, but with Talia and Lane, you believe it.
Oh, yeah, I think, honestly, all the characters were really, really believable. I think the making me believe who they were, like their personalities, like them being these specific people, and I think also it'd be a tip of the hat to the writer for honestly not trying to make all the characters so like even Lane as an example, right? He was scummy to begin with because he tried to lure James to, you know, oh look, your sister might be alive.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm gonna just take advantage but of this poor kid.
He basically was a big weenie, you know, like once he started getting kicked out, he's like, hey, wait, okay, like come on, like, you know, you don't have to do that.
You see the flaws in their character.
And I love that because I'm like, yeah, that's really what would happen if somebody who was just like an internet troll or whatever, like thinking that, you know, he's gonna be like super, super like edgy, and then all of a sudden when the real world hits, like he's like, oh shit, like I'm not prepared for this, like I'm dealing with a whole next level of like problems that I didn't think were gonna come up, and then it just
the
like,
script,
you know,
flips basically because you see Lane and Tali kind of smirking at Peter and Ashley as they're trying to struggle with the tent. And you can kind of say that bit of like, oh, you guys are from like the city, or you're not from around here, and like you don't know what you're doing. And no, we're both here in this woods, and we're completely in this. Going into the believability of it all, at the end of the day, you never really see the witch, even in this one as well. Yeah. And that goes into the power of the folklore and the power of just this presence that this character has. Because throughout the entirety of the movie, and there's a certain point when they literally sat by a campfire and they talk about stories of the Blair Witch and they explain the backstory of it, which the character does have a good amount of backstory. To me, I've always loved folklore. When I was younger, I was a huge fan, even though I shouldn't have been reading them, of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, those three anthology stories that they were children's books, and they shouldn't have been children's books in the first place. I've shown you some of them, and the illustrations on those were just nightmare fuel. I think Guillermo del Toro's working on making a movie. Sometimes it's in the works, but it's in the development house since we've started the page at this point. That was one of the first posts that we made. the idea of just looking and going on, that there's these tales passed back from in the 1800s, the 1700s, and they just keep going down, and it's just, you know, that majority of these are all bullshit, but it's the wanting to believe into it and wanting to just enjoy, just have, like, just let yourself be taken by these stories. I've always found, like, some sort of enjoyment in that. And that's why, like, you know, especially, I mean, that's at horror is at its most core, is like, that's what you want from it.
Yeah.
And there being some semblance of reality in this also helps with that. And because that being, like, the witch trials in America was a thing, and it was a terrible thing.
Yeah.
A lot of innocent people died over just ignorance in the time period.
Oh, yeah, a lot of ignorance.
And it's just something that where it's like, when you kind of wonder, like, how much of this was true? Were these characters, was there someone who was, studied witchcraft and just happened to just be a twisted person and just killed people back then? Now would be known as a serial killer, but through all this time, it's going to story pass down on and seeing which part of, how much of this is BS, how much of this is truth.
This is, in my opinion, a very, I would say, competent, successful sequel, because that's essentially what it is. And it's a sequel, and for it being a sequel, it actually did a pretty good job, in my opinion. And continuing, like you were saying, like that lore of it's being real. It's real. Like, this is what we're watching. We're watching real, like, footage, and we're watching all these real events that happen. And everything really goes, you know, downhill, and, you know, people are starting to die, and everything's leading up to essentially, like, almost like the climax and the fall, you know, the resolution of this, like, once they get to the house. And it reminded me of, like, Resident Evil, the newest Resident Evil game, where it's just like, Jesus, man, this is just horrifying. Like, you are literally in a hell house stuck with mazes.
And you were saying you're almost like in a gate of hell.
Yeah, you're like, you literally enter, like, when you first go open, and you're just like, you're like, you have like, what, like five doors in front of you, and it's like, pick one. And it's like, which hell do you want to go through today?
Yeah.
And it's, man.
You
know,
like, at this point, it's like, you're pretty sure that your mind is not working with what you're seeing in front of you. There's nothing, you can't tell what's real. You don't know who's controlling it. And that's terrifying. The stakes are constantly being raised. And when at this certain point, because, like we were saying, and I kind of mirrored off on the trail of a little bit when we were getting back to Talia's death scene.
Yeah.
When they come back and they meet everyone before all this hits the fan, Lane doesn't want to go with them because he says that we've been wandering for weeks.
Yeah.
And it's been a day. Talia decides to stay with them. At this point, they all go back to sleep, and when they wake up, there's giant, like, life-size versions of the stick figures that are just right there, and it's, it freaks the hell out of them, as of course it would be. Talia notices that there's her hair, she has blue hair, and it's essentially, it's all wrapped around this entire thing. Ashley doesn't believe her, breaks the thing just out of anger, and then she just snaps.
No, her whole body, her half her body just collapses. Like, her legs are behind her head. Like, it's
sudden, it's, and it's shocking. Just violent.
Yeah. And she's dead. She's literally snapped. And I love that they show it. You see her legs behind her in this folded position. And it's just, it's so horrifying how she died and how quick it was. Like, there was no, like, build. It was just literally like, and then you're just like, what the? And, like, after that point, everything goes to level 10.
And literally everything. Again, like, the last 30 minutes of it is some of the best usage of the found footage genre. Oh, it just is.
I would agree. Yeah. 100%. 100%. Like, from the everything in the house, I think, is, I would say, like, a peak of what the found footage genre could be and how terrifying all these things could be. The crawling. And you know, it's interesting because, for it being a found footage movie, they tackle a lot of different versions of horror. Like, they did body horror.
Yeah, because when you start dealing with Ashley, her character, she early in the movie, she went into the, when they were wading through the river, they said a leech bit her. They mentioned,
or like leeches, she, like, cut her foot on a rock or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and slowly but surely, it starts getting to where it's the leg is infected, or like, oh, it just hurts. No, it's fine. And then when Peter unwraps it and looks at it, you just see, like, this bit of something just, like, just coming out of it. Like, you don't know what's in there. It's like, it's, ugh. Yeah. And it's gross. And it's, like, this nice little slow burn of a effective just scare that if you know it's like, oh, all this other stuff is happening in the foreground, but in the background, this is also lingering and it's just marinating and it's going to pop at one point. And it does. And
yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, when she pulls the twig out of her legs. Yeah, she pulls like something and you see the pus squirt out. Oh, gross. My God.
Like, and it just adds for the fact that when she's even like climbing the tree to get the drone footage, which. What did you think of the drone footage? Because you were telling me that that was something that they were hyping it up.
Yeah, so...
I didn't pay attention to when this movie was coming out, but you were...
Yeah, yeah. So when the original marketing... I from what I remember, you know, back in 2016, I remember...
So long ago.
Yeah, like, the original marketing from it, what it was basically like a new Blair Witch, you know, like, here it is again, and... At first, I kind of saw it, and I was like, oh, are they just remaking the exact same movie? Because it looked... really similar to the exact same movie, but it almost seemed like it was literally going to be like the Blair Witch with drones, you know what I mean? Like, literally, like, the drone was supposed to be the thing that was supposed to capture everything. And like 2016, that was around the time when drones really became accessible. Everybody wanted to buy them all the time because, yeah, I don't know, maybe they saw Casey Neistat video and they were like, this is cool, like, we're all gonna just start using drones for footage. And But they tried to make the drone be like something really big in the marketing, which was kind of weird. And even the trailer, like, I think one of the first shots in the trailer is a drone shot. It's like, ooh, like, so I found it kind of silly, and I'm really glad the movie wasn't as bad as I think the marketing was. And I think that's also partly another reason why the movie didn't do as well, is because I think whoever marketed this, I think probably should have gone around along the angle that this is going to expand the original lore of the Blair Witch in conjunction versus, like, you know, oh, it's another found footage movie that's right. Just like all the other ones that had been coming out the last few years, like the Paranormals. Like, I think how many were, like, 7 of them?
Well, remember,
like,
that was the general, you know, like, the general consensus that I could feel in the air with everyone when this came out.
Yeah.
And there was a couple things in this one that didn't work. I know, as we've been, like, really just like hyping the movie up, and it is a good movie. There's a lot of jump scares that are just,
yeah, there are standard, a lot of jump scares, yeah.
It's very cheap things where, like, someone will walk by and then they're like, hey, like, you know, or like, and you're just like, that's not how someone would act, like, no one does that or something, and it's just not, it just kind of takes you out of the
movie. Yeah, like, okay, they do a little nod to that though, which I thought was funny. There's a line that one of the characters throws in there. He's like, I wish everyone would stop doing that.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And I'm like, that's pretty funny. So they acknowledge that.
It's like, yeah, I wish people, some movies would stop that.
It was a very, you know, like, yeah, low brow joke.
A little tongue-in-cheek, yeah. A little jab at that.
But you know, I think just going back to what you were saying though about, I think, the marketing and just the movie in general, I'm glad that, you know, you watched, and I really hope that other people actually give this movie a chance, you know, even if you're like an OG Blair Witch, or like, you know, like, this movie, even if you never know anything about the Blair Witch, just watching this movie, regardless of the marketing, or if you just won that you didn't ever caught the train, like, I really hope people kind of reach out and try to watch this movie, because I think it's definitely something that I don't think would disappoint.
Yeah, no, man, I agree. There's a semblance of competency in this movie that doesn't really exist in a lot of these found footage movies. Me, myself, I had a really good blast of it. It reminded me why I love the genre. Because for an hour and 30 minutes, I was invested. I was immersed in this. I believed that there was a Blair Witch. Okay, completely. But it took me along into the journey, and I was happy to have it. It's on Hulu. All three of the movies are on Hulu. If you haven't seen the first one, go watch that. At this point, if you're in the podcast, you know the movie. If you're interested or not, you're going to be interested regardless of it.
Yeah.
Go check it out. At this point, that really ends our review segment of the podcast. We're going to go and take a quick little break right now, get into a little bit of our ad sponsorships right now. But after that, we're going to get into the legacy of the Blair Witch, the Blair Witch Project, and in general, what the entire franchise has done for film as a whole, because it has had a little bit of an effect, whether or not we want to admit it or not. So, we'll see you guys right after the break. I've always looked forward to breaks, whether it be when I'm at work and I'm just tired and want to get off that shift, or I'm in class and I just want to go home and get my ass back to doing what I love doing, talking to you guys and making content for all of you beautiful people. And now that we've gotten to the halfway point and we've gotten to the nice, juicy center of the meat of this podcast, we've now hit the breakpoint, and we've got the hookup just for you guys. Still Hungry IE is home of the notorious donut burger, Ludachuck burger, fries, drinks, and anything else you crave. Just stop by their trucks and stands in the Inland Empire, Orange County, and LA County area and let them know that you're from Pretty Much Geek, and you'll get free fries and a drink with the purchase of a notorious D&B. If you want to find out where they are exactly when you've got the munchies, you can follow them at StillHungryIE on Instagram. Now, as much as I love doing promos, I like eating the stuff for promos. So let's get back to the podcast, and I'm going to get back to my D&B. Hello, everyone. We're back from the break, and we're talking nothing but legacy today. Alonzo, you a big fan of the original Blair Witch Project? You know my answer.
I know your answer.
It's kind of similar to yours, I think.
You know, yeah, and I think you know mine. Yeah. So
last week I was talking to Jose on the Black Lagoon podcast, and we were saying, like, there are some films, and there's some, whatever medium it is, there's always a founding aspect that helps it push it along. You respect what it did. Pong, Superman, I gave those two as an examples. And Blair Witch Project, being for the found footage films, it pioneered insanely. Not just for the for making it mainstream and making it a, oh, hey, Hollywood, or oh, hey, people, this is a type of film that can come out. Does it get you going? Well, here you know. We have it here and now. But also for viral marketing.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Which I know you, that's a big thing for you. And it's a big thing for me as well, but you're more of a, something that you're very passionate about.
For the original Blair Witch, and I'll speak for myself, like, I'm not a huge fan of the original Blair Witch, because I guess you would say from a film making point of view, and just the way it's kind of aged, it is very old and it's a little, you know, just really dated, I guess you want to say. But I respect the hell out of it, and especially what it did for viral marketing, what it did for the found footage genre. And honestly, like, I think, like, obviously it still gets a lot of credit for creating this, but telling people that this movie was, like, real, releasing a mockumentary of these, like, normal people, or these seemingly normal people of this town, talking about the Blair Witch as if it was an urban legend, like, it reminds me of, like, they literally created a creepypasta. Like, it is so engraved into a lot of people's, like, love, that I'm not saying people legitimately believe it, but they make it seem so real that people literally sent cards to the family of the actors in the original Blair Witch, to their families, because they were sad for their loss of, like, the three filmmakers that passed away, the three actors in the movie. And it's like, they took it to that level. And obviously the internet was very young in the 90s, but they were able to go that high and take it that high with, honestly, the amount of money they had. They made the movie for $22,000 was their budget, and the movie made over $600 million. Like, that is ridiculous. I really, really respect, and honestly, I think it directly inspires one of my favorite movies today, which is and I think why I'm so passionate about it is Cloverfield, with their viral marketing, the idea of releasing these, like, sort of found footage, like, you couldn't tell what was a monster there.
I remember they played it in front of Transformers. It was a trailer. They played it right before there was nothing. They didn't even leave they might have left the website, right?
I think all they left at first was a date. I think it was just a date at first. It wasn't even a title or anything.
They play the intro from, like, a little piece of the movie where the Statue of Liberty head just bounces into the street, and it just leaves you like that. Things like that here and there, that, which now, I mean, every movie has some sort of viral marketing to it, where the nicheness of it is gone.
Yeah.
And it's almost like you're expected to have that as part of your viral marketing. We're going to create a couple of short films before the movie comes out, prequel comics, things like that here and there, where it's just like, we're hyping it up. We want you to go watch this movie. And when it's done well, it just immerses you in it. I know that Dawn of the Planet of the Apes did a little version of that too, where they were trying to tell you about, like, the simian flu, and how to, they're showing, like, treating it as if though it's like, you, here are the actual, like, website for the CDC created for when the singing flu, how do you can prevent it, how you can tell if it, you can spot it or things like that here and there.
Yeah.
And it's like just things like that. When you treat your material with respect and you treat it as though it, with the respect that you have from when you're accepting it as a creator, it builds onto it more and people can pick up on that. It's just vibes that we were getting off of that. And I didn't watch this documentary that you were watching. I'm going to go watch it after we're done recording this, but you were telling me that it was really good.
Oh yeah, so like the documentary they released, with the original Blair Witch, as I was watching, because I had never actually seen it, and I watched it recently, and I could see why people fell into it. Honestly, like the people all seem very like, and I'm talking about genuinely normal people that grew up in this town. They were like, oh yeah, these were all the liberal legends we all learned as kids. We all know about them. We all heard all the stories that happened in the town of Blair and Burkittsville. We all know these. Like, but the way everybody just talks about it and everyone just seems so familiar with it. Everybody in the town and in the documentary makes it seem as if like this legend, it's real, or like there's some truth to it. And genuinely, I'm like, no wonder back in the 90s, everybody was like believing that this was real.
Or believing footage. That Y2K was a thing as well.
I honestly, and even today, you know, like me watching that, like not today, but you know, like in this time frame, I was even like, oh man, I might be able to believe this, especially if I didn't have other ways to find more information. Oh, I would have definitely kind of started to fall into this. Obviously, I'm not the biggest believer in spirits but the whole mythos.
Those documentaries, mythos. When they do them right, I remember King Kong, Peter Jackson's King Kong, they had a little making of documentary, the ones that Peter Jackson really puts out, but he did one that was supposed to treat Skull Island like it was an actual thing. And they got like paleontologists and geologists like actually to be like acting on the side to make sure it's like, oh no, this actually happened. It's eroding away since the beginning of time. And here's all these specific background information that we can have on that. So, I mean, I believe that whether this entire thing, because the mythos that you were saying from the Blair Witch, it's terrifying. It's sad. The witch herself dates back 200 years ago.
Yeah, it's from
her name was Ellie Kedward.
Yeah.
And it has a foot in unbelievability and a foot in, this is so out there and it's so ancient that it might be true.
Yeah. Like,
because she was born in Ireland and her and her father were taken away at age 10, kidnapped. Her father was crucified. Her father was crucified on branches, hence why now she creates all of these stick figures and these branches and these brambles, and she uses it for her victims the same way her father was, because that was the night that her innocence was stripped away. She was raped. Her father was killed. And there's all these other things where you're just seeing the story of this poor woman as she moves on and she starts learning about witchcraft, and she goes from a sane asylum and is just treated and you feel bad for her.
Yeah.
She moves over to the United States and plants herself in Blair, and you just kind of see where the problems that plagued over in Ireland move over, and she's just taking her little nest in America as it's forming and just rooting herself into the land.
Yeah, and obviously this all takes the movie, for those who don't know, like the city of Blair, it's in Maryland, so it literally feels like it could have maybe existed. Like some of these facts, like obviously some are just obviously fake, you know, but if I was somebody in the time who didn't know anything and really didn't have the internet at that point or even a computer, I would have believed there was an Ellie Kedward, like that she was existed. I wouldn't maybe have believed she was a witch. I would have believed that there was a town called Blair, because like yet again in the mockumentary, like there's such a common conversation that happens around it, as if like, oh yeah, like it's just everybody knows, like it's such a known thing. Like it's like almost like, how do you not know? Continuing that with what the movie did in its legacy for all of viral marketing, all of this I would say like melding of real life, like our real life, versus like what a movie can be, like what a movie can just be by itself. I think it was like the first that not only did it right, but really started a trend, like whether it be Cloverfield, whether it be like all these other viral marketing ad campaigns that go along with all these movies. I think it was one of the first time that it did it so right that it It made a movie that cost $22,000 make $600 million. I think regardless of time, like, this is going to be one of those movies that's always going to be remembered for either starting or really just, you know, lighting a fire under the whole viral marketing. And just exactly like the Marvel movies, it was such an event for some people that I don't know if anybody else will ever have a chance to really, like, you know, experience that like they did back when this movie came out. And just like us, luckily, we were just, you know, born in the right time that we get to experience these MCUs, all these cinematic universes, and how they all just meld together. And
I think really it's only one at this point, but
well, yeah,
it's one with a bunch of other movies trying to which is similar to this one, but no, I have similar thoughts on the Blair Witch Project. I had an interest in it, and I had an intrigue because I knew and I heard about how crazy and how exciting and just what it did for film and what it did for film being, you know, very loosely lowercase. And I watched it. I remember I bought it at Target. They had it like on like a clearance bin. It was like $1, and I'm like, why not? I'm gonna check it out. And I remember liking the first part where they were doing the investigating aspect of it, but as it kept on going, it just lost me. I try to look at it with the idea of that in the time when it was being made, it was very pioneering, and it did what it did for the genre, and it just did its own thing. There was nothing else like it. And I appreciate it from that aspect, like you're saying, mirroring a lot of the things that you just said right now. I can't, it's not as effective as, say, this one is. And yeah, there are some aspects of this movie that, the new one, that mirror it. I like to view it as it's similar traps that the witch is playing as anyone that walks into there, because it's just how she hunts her prey.
Yeah.
Whether it be Lane or Heather, Rustin Parr from the 40s, people who come into this wood will fall victim to her and be used as her pawn.
Yeah.
And as we see in the movie, there's that house that just randomly shows up in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. It's a haunting image of seeing it almost becomes a rainforest.
Oh yeah.
And there is one lone house, abandoned, cluttered, just forsaken in the middle of the woods that they've been roaming around, and it's in the dark, and it's insanely scary.
And I love how it just almost like appears, it emerges out of like this dense forest that they've been running around for, like, at that point for days now. Still, like, it's so creepy to just this house showing up. And you know, like, going back to the what you said, actually, to Rustin Parr, him being the owner of that house, and that actually ties back more into the lore of the Blair Witch, and yet again, Burkittsville, and Blair, and all this, and all the mythos that have kind of carried over, continuing this urban legend of the Blair Witch, which that Rustin Parr was a preacher that in his 20s decided to move out to the woods, and in his late 30s, he started noticing just a lady in the forest that was watching him, and he would call out to her, and then nothing, you know, she would disappear. So he didn't think much of it. Slowly that started building. It went from him just seeing her to him having nightmares, to him then all of a sudden hearing voices. And then he started hearing voices during the day. And what this voice was, and everybody knows, or as the myth were to say, it's the Blair Witch talking to him, telling him, and he actually had to do something sort of unspeakable to satisfy the Blair Witch.
And that's when he essentially killed 7 or 8 children.
Yeah, he killed 7. He killed 7, and one stood in the corner and not to look while he murdered the other 7 children. And that's why
you can't look at the Blair Witch. And that's been like seen from either the first movie to on now this one. Yeah, the whole premise of this new one is that the reason why they go there and they head back to Burkittsville is that they see these videos that Lane put up on the internet, because he found them. And that's what you find out in them, that you see a figure just looking straight at the corner of the at the wall, and then you also see the semblance of a face. And in the beginning of the movie, James takes it as like, no, that's my sister. That's Heather. She's still out there. There's still a chance for it. Which at the end of the movie, we find out when they start dealing with time and everything like that, you see from the very own POV footage on from their cameras on their earpieces, but no, that's Lisa.
Yeah, it's Lisa.
And it creates this giant just circle in this time loop.
It's so great too, because it's like and it's something they actually talk about too, that the witch, she lures people. She lures people into her forest, and like, you know, and yet again, I think it's obviously had to do with the connection of of James and Peter, who when he was a child was there for the original searches for Heather in the original movie. So like,
and the same thing for Lane as well, since Lane and Talia, since they lived there, because whether or not they know they are or not, they have some part to play into this. They're the ones that said, let's walk you into this woods.
Yep.
Let's be a part of it. And later in the movie, Lane becomes directly under her spell. You have to follow her bidding or else. And he ends up getting killed by Lisa because, you know, he's crazy. And, you know, it's, he's doing what he can because she's got herself tattooed in, or hooked into his head. And you just see all of these different people. And that's what I was saying at the beginning of the podcast, is that this creature or this person at one point, she rooted herself into the ground, and it's almost like the very soil itself around in that area in Maryland is haunted and it's cursed.
Originally, I assumed that the creature that we see in this Blair Witch was the witch, because
you see this, it almost looks like the witch from Left 4 Dead.
Yeah, like it's, she's using, like she and
it's a nice little tie-in because we keep using that as our intro for the Violent Horror, which is a nice little thing to mention that right there.
And she has like these stretched out arms, which people say it's like in reference to the actual Blair Witch, where she was stretched out and tortured before, you know, she ended up being murdered. And actually, there's a really crazy theory that's going on. That figure that we see that chases them through the house is actually Heather. Because a lot of people believe that once you do the witch's bidding, she actually will release you. Just like how we were talking about in the house, Rustin Parr, he actually ended up being released from the witch once he actually killed the seven children. Obviously, he was arrested because there were seven bodies of children found, but the witch did let him go. So it's really interesting how there's these rules that are created by the world of the witch. And yet again, all these little things just really add to the mythos of what exactly the Blair Witch is. Because there's these like almost unsaid rules that nobody knows if they are real or not, or if they're permanent. No, you know, it's like, what is the order in this chaos?
And at the end of the day, this character, this creature was made from chaos. It was made from hate. It was made from just torture, and she's taking it out on people whether or not they are deserving of it or not. Some people probably were, but since majority of them are children and unsuspecting people, they're not. But just like she was, putting them through the trials, through all of the horror that she got put through.
Yeah.
And you're gonna have to go through the walk a mile miles in her shoes if you want to get out of these woods. And there's a twisted sense of that, almost similar to like what you would kind of very more primal one, but less thought out probably version of like how Jigsaw operates, as like, yeah, like where there's a sense of just order, a journey, yeah, and some sort of thing that's going through here, and like the rules and aspects of it that make it, give it this mythos and give it this bit of just respect,
yeah,
fear mostly, and that is all it is. Like I said, when I first saw that creature, I did think it was the witch, but I think I like the idea of it being Heather more. Because it, when you're taking to that extreme and your body is just, you don't resemble a human anymore, you're like a golem like creature, you do what you can to get out of those woods, and you do what you can. And the thing is, it's almost terrifying as an idea, is that once your shackles are taken off of you, will you remain that thing? Will you revert back to how you were?
Yeah,
you don't really know that.
And going back even into the creature too, I thought it was the creature. I thought it was the witch, because from interviews that the director and other cast members have had, they actually said that they originally were going to show the Blair Witch, but one of the cameramen messed up, and so when they actually were supposed to show her, they didn't. And so I thought that this movie was like almost them making good of what they were supposed to show in the original. But I believe it was the screenwriter came out and said that actually wasn't the witch. It was just another fellow victim that fell victim to the witch. And yet again, it's just a theory, but thinking that it's Heather, that, you know, that creature is Heather just doing the bid of the Blair Witch, trying to get out because she was also called upon the Blair Witch, just like Rustin Parr. I think it really puts a nice little knot on the top of this mythos that is the Blair Witch.
Witchcraft and witches have been something that, obviously the Hollywood version of it, because I know that witchcraft and Wicca is a thing that has been dramatically like changed in Hollywood to obviously make movies like this and so like that. But it's terrifying to me. It's one of those few things that I've always scared me on some level. I don't I'm not superstitious, but I am a little stitious. Most of my upbringing, as I said, like last year, was religious. So there's going to be some parts of when I watch movies like this, or Hereditary, The Witch, Omen, and things like this, where that idea of something, a fellow human having such confidence and knowledge of their craft of seducing or taking advantage of manipulating us as people, unsuspecting wise, and making us do things whether or not we know of it or not, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
And whether it be things that we're doing in our day-to-day lives, things that seem like normal, or wandering into a woods to never be found again and caught in an infinite time loop and be used and abused to the end of time. That is a very terrifying idea. It's been used in various other mediums, and it's always something that's just creepy, and it always just gets your blood crawling. And I'm happy that we picked something like this. Whenever we have to do some, we do some sort of thing about witchcraft or witches, I think it's a template that needs to be like tacked on, and it's really a creepy thing. I'm glad that we're talking about.
Yeah, and just really quick too, I just gotta say two things. One, a tip of the hat to the actress crawling through that cave, through that little tunnel system, because she actually had to do that claustrophobic tunnel.
Oh, that part was terrible.
And they said that when they built that tunnel, when they built that tunnel, they said they literally only made it an inch bigger than her shoulder widths to literally make her feel as if she was stuck. And she did that six takes. She took six takes of that, crawling through that, and it was funny because they even said that the cameraman that was with her was more scared than she was. So I give that actress props.
That she was terrified. I was mentioning it earlier, the acting in the movie. That was the height I felt. Ass off, because you could just feel like just that frustration, fear, and just claustrophobia that was just emanating from her.
Yeah.
Because you're just put into this such a very, you got the witch, but you don't know if she's going to come from you. And I wasn't even telling you, it's like, if you were going to go into, you can't go up, you can't go back, you got to go forward. Are you going to go head first or feet first?
Yeah.
And you're kind of screwed both ways, but which way would you go?
Yeah, and I was like, I'm going to go head first, because I'm like, you know what? I can at least kick behind me, but I'd rather see the death coming. And if I'm going feet first, I can't really look behind me. And if something grabs me and pulls me that way forward, like, I'm already going that way, and I just feel like I would hate to. Yeah, I would still go head first probably. Like, there's just so much in this movie that they did right. You know, I wouldn't say that this was a classic of any kinds, but I think it did an honor to the original Blair Witch, to the found footage genre, and it just deserves, in my opinion, a tip of the hat, being a really well made horror flick that I think, regardless of your specific fear that you have, it will some way find a way to scare you. And I think that's what it does really well.
And just adding on top of that, I would just say it's a solid horror movie that you can just watch and put on, and just it'll do what you want it to do. Yeah. It has those effective scares, it has those effective things that it's pioneering in the genre itself, and it was one of the movies that I was pleasantly surprised at what I was having to do, because at first I thought it would be the weakest of the ones that we were going to be reviewing this year. But I'm happy that it was one of the highlights at the end of the day. And at the end of the day, it's time for the end of the podcast, and it's a little time for shameless plugs, which is the best way and the most honest segue I can get for you guys. And for those of you guys who is your first podcast, thank you guys for joining us. I appreciate any time we get a new listener. Stanley always said every comic is someone's first comic, and every podcast is someone's first podcast. I had mine, you guys have yours. And if you're here, you want to hear more from us, you can follow us on several of our social media links. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram. Those are more of our day-to-day things. You'll see stories from us and more posts about anything involving comics, video games, TV, film, everything pretty much geek. It's pretty self-explanatory. We'll have me, Alonzo, and several of other editors on the page posting comments and posting news about the day-to-day things in the geek world. And if you want to hear more of a day-to-day thing as well, we also have a partnership with 90.1 KBBK. We have our In Hindsight series, which is one that we used to do for our YouTube. We go back and look at films from both classic and contemporary, regardless of nostalgia, but all with love. And we just take a look at them and just see what we can. So check us out on TuneIn 90.1 KBBK or on the radio 90.1 FM KBBK every day at 2:20 p.m. And on top of all that, that's not just the only thing we got to talk about. We are heading, and now it's 2 weeks.
Yep, 2 weeks.
We're heading all the way to LA. Me, you, Jose, Parker, we're going to be going over and checking out the LA Convention Center, for LA Comic Con. Pretty Much Geek has made it, guys. We are going to be going there on the floor, giving you guys a POV experience of the con, whether or not you're there. If you're there, come say hi to us. If not, you can follow us on our feeds on Instagram and our Facebook. We'll have interviews from some of your favorite creators, Tenacious D, the Jimmy Neutron cast, Greg Capullo, Scotty Young, Brett Dalton. The list goes on and on. They're still releasing more and more people that on the actual list and stuff like that. I'm excited for it, and you guys should be excited for it too.
Oh yeah,
it's gonna take over the page for the 26th to the 28th, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too.
As always, Pretty Much Geek is community. Let us know in the comments what you think about us. If you agree with what our opinions are on the movies that we're talking about, if you don't agree with us and you want to tell us anything, let us know. Having those comments and having this back and forth communication, it's part of the community and part of what makes Pretty Much Geek what it is. So, Lonzo, thank you for joining me.
As always.
And until next week, when we head to the Arctic for The Thing, this has been Marcel Delgado. And for everything else important, newsworthy, and Pretty Much Geek, we'll have it covered all under our radar.